Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really focusing on gold. It's seen quite a climb recently.
We had a climb.
Yeah, exactly. And the big question is, well, where does it go from here? We've gathered some interesting stuff for you, reports from Trading Economics, the Economic Times, analysis from Sven Carlin, you know, the PhD on YouTube, and a Goldman Sachs report, too.
Right, some heavy hitters there.
Our mission, really, is to cut through the noise, figure out what's driving gold, what the forecasts look like, and just give you some clarity. You know, is this rally sustainable? What should you make of it?
It's definitely a fascinating mix of global events and expert takes we need to sift through.
Okay, let's dive in then. Gold's performance since the start of 2025, it's been pretty remarkable, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
We're looking at, what, a 25.90% surge? That's $679.73 per troy ounce.
A huge jump. And for anyone wondering, a troy ounce, that's the standard weight for precious metals.
Right. So this brings us near $3,300 lately. And remember, just last month, April 2025, it hit $3,500, an all-time high.
Indeed.
So what's pushing it up so much?
Well, it's really a combination of factors, all sort of feeding into each other. Geopolitical risk is a big one.
Like the Middle East situation.
Exactly. Reports about Israel potentially planning a strike on Iran nuclear sites that naturally makes people worry about a wider conflict.
And gold is the classic safe haven, right? People run to it when things look shaky.
That's the historical pattern, yes. It's seen as a store of value during turbulent times.
Makes sense. And the U.S. dollar, its strength or lack thereof, is also playing a role here, isn't it?
It is. The dollar's been a bit subdued, partly to the Fed's cautious outlook, partly Moody's downgrade of the U.S. credit rating.
Right, the debt levels.
Yeah. And a weaker dollar basically makes gold cheaper for buyers using other currencies.
So more affordable internationally, which boosts demand.
Generally, yes. The inverse relationship often holds.
Okay. So global tensions, a weaker dollar. What else is in the mix? I remember reading about economic policy uncertainty.
That's another key piece. There's this ongoing lack of clarity about future tariff policies. And there's an upcoming vote on Trump's tax reforms.
Ah, yes.
And that kind of stuff can definitely shake investor confidence in, let's say, more traditional assets. It pushes some towards the perceived safety of gold.
Okay, got it. Geopolitics, dollar weakness, policy questions. Now, that Goldman Sachs report, it really hammered the point about central banks buying gold.
It did. They see this multi-year trend of strong central bank demand as a, well, a fundamental pillar supporting prices.
The numbers are pretty staggering when you look at them.
They really are. Okay. The U.S., as of December 2024, holding over 8,100 tons. Germany, over 3,350 tons as of March 25. Italy, France, significant amounts too.
Over 2,400 tons each.
Right. And India, close to 880 tons. But what's really interesting is China.
They've been increasing their holdings.
Yeah, noticeably. They went from about 2,280 tons in December 24 up to over 2,292 tons by March 25. It's a consistent trend.
So why are central banks doing this? What's the thinking?
Well, several reasons, likely. Diversification is one, getting away from holding too many U.S. dollars.
Makes sense, spreading the risk.
Exactly. And in today's, you know, geopolitical climate, gold doesn't carry the same political risk as holding another nation's currency.
Sven Carlin mentioned the freezing of Russian assets back in 2022 probably spurred this on too, right?
That's a very plausible catalyst, yes. It highlighted the potential risks of foreign currency reserves and likely made holding a non-political asset like gold seem, well, much more attractive for some countries.
Okay, that clarifies the central bank angle. Now back to that Moody's downgrade. Initially, it sparked some safe haven buying in gold, didn't it?
It did. That was a classic reaction. But then
talk of a possible Russia-Ukraine ceasefire emerged, and that dampened the gold demand a bit.
Precisely. Optimism, even tentative optimism, about de-escalation can reduce that immediate flight to safety urge. It just shows how sensitive gold is to shifting geopolitical news.
It really bounces around based on the headlines.
It can, yeah.
And one last driver, Goldman Sachs, also mentioned ETF investors. Exchange-traded funds holding physical gold. They're apparently increasing their holdings again.
That's what Goldman's analysis suggests. They think these investors are looking ahead, anticipating potential interest rate cuts, maybe getting more worried about a recession.
And gold tends to do better in those scenarios. Lower rates, economic downturns.
Historically, yes. It's often seen as performing relatively well in those kinds of environments.
Okay, so wow, it's a really tangled web of factors pushing and pulling on the price?
Definitely not simple.
So let's switch gears to predictions. What are the experts actually forecasting? Trading Economics has some numbers out.
They do. Their model suggests gold might trade around $3,249.60 per troy ounce by the end of this quarter.
Okay, so still high, but maybe leveling off a bit from the peak?
Potentially. And looking out 12 months, their forecast is around $3,390.89. So still predicting an upward trend, just maybe a bit more gradual.
Right. And then there's Goldman Sachs. They seem, well, more bullish.
Definitely more bullish, yes. Their main forecast is for gold to hit $3,700 an ounce by the end of 2025.
$3,700.
Wow. And they even have a recession scenario where it could potentially climb to $3,880.
Goodness, what's driving their optimism?
They're really leaning on that sustained central bank buying we discussed, and also renewed interest they're seeing from those ETF investors. They see those as powerful forces.
Okay. But let's bring in some other voices. Manoj Kumar Jain from Prasvifan Mark Commodity Research's Economic Times reported his view. He expects volatility.
Yes. Jain sees continued choppiness for both gold and silver. He points to swings in the dollar index, you know, how the dollar stacks up against other currencies, and also the ongoing uncertainty around any Russia-Ukraine peace hopes.
So more ups and downs expected. Did he give any specific price levels?
He did, for the Indian market, the MCX. Support around Rs 92,200, 92,750 per 10 grams, and resistance between Rs 93,850 and 94,400. Internationally, he mentioned a support level around $3,120 per ounce. Those are key levels traders might watch.
Useful markers? And then there's Aksha Kamboj from the India Bullion and Jewelers Association. Her take was interesting, basically saying any dip might be a buying opportunity.
Yeah, suggesting that even if we get positive news, say on tariff talks, which might normally push gold down temporarily, the underlying reasons to hold gold are still strong.
Mm-hmm.
So view dips as chances to buy in.
That shows a pretty strong belief in gold's fundamental appeal.
It certainly implies a long-term bullish perspective, yeah.
Okay, now for a bit of a reality check. Sven Carlin, on his channel, he takes a pretty critical look at Wall Street forecasts, doesn't he?
He does. It's a really valuable perspective. He argues, quite convincingly sometimes, that analyst price targets often just follow the price up or down. They react rather than predict.
He gave examples, right? Like the LBMA forecasts or Meta stock.
Exactly. He showed how targets were often raised after the price had already moved significantly. It suggests a bit of herd mentality or perhaps just trend following rather than true foresight.
So we should take those big target numbers with a grain of salt.
He certainly suggests caution. Be aware of the potential bias towards just adjusting targets based on current momentum.
He also mentioned Goldman's like extreme risk scenario target. $4,500 by mid-2026.
Yeah, which just highlights the huge range of possibilities people are talking about. But Carlin also does acknowledge that central bank buying, especially post-Russian asset freeze, is a very real and significant factor supporting gold. He aligns with Goldman on that point.
Right, but then he contrasts that with Warren Buffett's famous view.
That gold has no utility, yeah.
Yeah.
Buffett's argument is that it just sits there, it doesn't produce anything. Carlin himself takes a more, let's say, agnostic stance. Gold doesn't make more gold.
It's not like a company generating profits or a bond paying interest.
Precisely. It's a crucial difference. Its value comes from supply, demand, and sentiment, not from generating inherent returns.
So Carlin sees it more as maybe a small portfolio diversifier, like Ray Dalio's idea.
Yeah. He discusses that holding a small percentage, maybe rebalancing it, it's about its role as a potential hedge or diversifier, not as a core growth engine.
Okay. And he also talked about gold mining stocks, which is another layer entirely.
Right. He points out that just because the price of gold goes up doesn't automatically mean gold mining companies deliver amazing returns.
Why is that? Seems counterintuitive.
Well, things like how well the company manages its money, capital allocation decisions, actual production challenges, they all play a huge role. Use Barrick Gold as an example.
Big company, market cap around $36 billion.
Yeah, but Carlin noted its free cash flow yield wasn't that impressive, even with high gold prices, possibly due to some of these other factors. So investing in miners is a different bet than investing in gold itself.
That's a really critical distinction for people to understand. Miner stocks versus the metal.
Absolutely. Different risks, different potential rewards.
Okay, so let's try to wrap this up. If you had to boil it down, what are the main takeaways for someone listening about gold right now?
Well, first, I'd say understand that gold's price is caught in this really complex web. You've got geopolitics, you've got the U.S. dollar, interest rate expectations, central bank actions, ETF investor mood.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Many moving parts. And second, while some forecasts are calling for new highs,
remember Sven Carlin's point. Be a little skeptical. Forecasts can sometimes follow the trend rather than lead it. Don't just chase the latest big number.
Good advice. And also, be clear on what you're investing in.
Exactly. Physical gold, or a gold ETF that tracks the price, is very different from buying stock in a company that mines gold. Understand that difference.
And finally, remember gold's fundamental nature.
Right. It can be a hedge, a diversifier against uncertainty, but it doesn't inherently produce anything like earnings or interest. Its long-term return profile is different from stocks or bonds.
It doesn't pay dividends. It just sits there, as Buffett would say.
Pretty much. Its value is what the next person is willing to pay.
Okay. So that brings us to our final thought for you, the listener. Given everything we've discussed, the bullish forecasts, the skeptical views, the different drivers, gold's unique nature, what role, if any, does gold realistically play in your own financial strategy going forward?
Yeah, that's the key question to mull over, isn't it? How does it fit, or does it fit at all for you personally?
Definitely something to think about. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.